So like at that point, actually, it already had like a very peculiar boot setup with head. Like I had a lot of cuts, I had a lot of carbon in the back, I had all these things that I had like made my like setup before this rule change really good.
Yep.
And I didn't want to mess with that too much because I liked how like the position it put me in, especially like, I mean, this is another like side tangent. Course setting at the time was like really tight and turny. And so you needed something that turned a lot. Nowadays, like back then it was like 24 meters from turn, GS turn to GS turn on average and like pretty turny. Nowadays it's like 28 meters in dead straight. So like the sport's changed a lot as far as like course setting in that like that time frame.
Yeah, okay.
But so like you needed something that would like crank a tight radius and like you could hold across the fall line as well.
Yeah.
And so like I just had a lot of like cuts in it.
Welcome back to another episode of the Big Picture Skiing Podcast. I'm Tom Gelly, and yes, that was Ted Ligety talking about the change in radius skis and length of skis back in 2012-2013. And that era was an era Ted Ligety dominated the sport in GS. He was a cut above everyone else. I can remember watching races where he would win by over 2 seconds, which is just outstanding. And so we kick off this interview with exactly what did he do? What changes did he make? Because he was actually a voice against the change in the skis back then, yet he was the one that rose to the top. And what's really cool is just before this, I was skiing in the East with Manny Osborne Parody, a Canadian Olympic skier and World Cup speed skier. And he actually posed the question to Ted. I said, what would you ask him? Anything you could ask Ted Ligety. And he asked him, what did you do to dominate the sport? And what did you do with training, equipment, physiology, technique to get there? So there's some really interesting insights now that Ted is retired that he can talk about, but I think you'll find some really new insights, some things you've never heard from Ted before in this podcast. We get into some nice things like talking about skiing with children, so his son Jax, and what he's done to make that a fun and enjoyable experience. He talks about his recent partnership as an ambassador for the online digital ski coach Carve, which is really interesting. So he's now helping to develop training programs and drive that new technology, as well as the story about Shred, his brand of optics and protection wear for skiers. So I think there's some really cool stuff to bite into here, to listen from a man who has achieved like such high levels of ski racing and dominance. And if you're a ski nerd, you definitely know who Ted Ligety is and want to listen to every little ounce of information he's got. A final word from me, if you're a skier that loves learning, that loves getting better, loves improving, and you want a resource, I've built something, Big Picture Skiing. I have an app as well where I produce videos, content, all sorts of information that is designed to help you improve and take ownership of your learning and really get to the highest potential of skiing that you can get to. So on there, if you want to check it out, I invite you to visit bigpictureskiing.com. There's a 7-day free trial. You can see what the videos are about. There's just been new content released in the last few days. Lots of great feedback from the subscribers and members already about that. And I'd just like to say a big thank you to those of you that listen to the Big Picture Skiing podcast and all the Big Picture Skiing social media channels. Thank you. I'm really appreciative, and I will continue to bring out more interesting content to help you enjoy and love the sport we all love here, which is skiing. All right, let's get into the podcast.
I'm going to kick this off, not with me, but I've been hanging out with Manny Osborne Parody the last few days.
Yeah.
And I said, what would you ask Ted Ligety if you had to ask me a question? So I'm gonna play his question, and then we'll kick it off there.
All right, Ted. So Tom and I have been chatting this week, and he was excited that you're going to be on his podcast and whatnot, and he was saying, hey, listen, what kind of question would you ask Ted? And I actually, I knew right away what question I would ask you, because I think it's very cool. I was just wondering, now that you're not, racing, I'm sure you can share this, but just how you got the confidence in yourself to, you know, change from Rosignol to head, and then when that needed to happen, and then how did you just change your skiing approach and your tactics to getting to getting proficient on the longer ski. You were really, you know, you were a huge voice of reason, but negativity with the longer ski and the longer side cut and how that maybe was not as advantageous to viewerships and all that stuff. But again, you then were able to like shut that off and go and relearn how to ski on a ski. And you, I mean, essentially you innovated a new style of skiing on how to get around the gates, which is like super cool to me. I have like tons of respect for that to say, hey, listen, you know, the style of skiing that works now isn't the style of skiing that needs to work in the future. And you know, the payoff was huge. So, you know, kudos to you, my man.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of pieces to that, so the first question, I guess, is like the switch from Rossi to Head, which like when I was on Rossi, I like won the GS title and the next year I switched to Head. So like I'd done well, but I actually considered that season like a little bit of a failure because I didn't win Olympic medal in Vancouver. And I mean, honestly, it was like kind of an easy switch because I tested the Head skis. I liked them. I thought they like matched well with my skiing. And like, in some senses, like sometimes like switching ski companies, like for a racer is like kind of like a kick in the butt, a motivator. Like you're like, and it like kind of reinvigorates you. And Head was in a place where they wanted to throw a lot of resources and like, we're like, okay, like you need a new boot. We can make you a new boot. You need a new what? Like they're just like doing all that. And Rossi was in the inverse place where they're like, what you get is what you get right now. We're like in like, they're in bunker mode. So, I mean, that for that sense, that was a easy decision, I think, on my side of things. And then he was getting into, like, the 2012-2013, like, ski switch. So that came out the year before that. And initially they decided, like, so originally, like, our skis, my, like, race skis when I won, like, the title the next year on Head 2010-11 were... The rule was 27 meters and the skis just had to be over 185, which nobody ever skied on a 185 or a 27 meter radius. My skis were like a 29 meter radius and they're 191s. And initially they first had the rule come out as like 40 meter radius. And like, that was a complete joke. And actually like Head was part of that like testing that FIS was mandating. They made a pair of those and they like, we brought a pair down to New Zealand that year. And like, I wish I looked as good as Phil Mayer going down the course, you know, it was a complete joke. And that like made my blood boil and a lot of other people's blood boil when they actually did that. And I think like after they had like tested a couple times, they realized like, okay, this is like a really horrible decision. They took it to 35, which still at that point was like still old school skiing. And like, so I was like pissed, A, because I think like my personal view on equipment rules is there should be no rules. They're like, we should self-regulate ourselves. Like, I don't want to put a pair of equipment on myself that like, maybe I maximize speed, but like I am in a dangerous position because like for me as an athlete, like my longevity and like ability to be consistent is more important than like maximum speed. So I think like as us athletes, like I want a pair of skis that I can consistently make at the bottom of the course without like the skis forcing mistakes on me. And that's going to be the fastest, but also the safest way. So like leave it to me to regulate myself. And so that's, I guess, my viewpoint on that. So like having a ski rule come through that is like in a way perceived to be like designed against me because it's Tony Giger, who is the head of the Austrian Ski Federation, kind of coming up with the rules and doing the testing. And then like none of the athletes had any input, like that just pissed me off on a fundamental level. And I thought that it was gonna be bad for the sport. I didn't think it was gonna change any injuries, which is really the impetus for doing it. Like the reason there's injuries in skiing is that you have a 2 meter long lever arm attached to your ski. Attached to your foot. Like,
yeah.
There's no way around that. Like, whether you make it straight or side cut, like, it's still 2 meter long lever arm, yeah. Like, yeah. Attached to your leg that you don't want coming off in high G situations. So, therefore, it doesn't come off always when you fall. And so that's really, I guess, the core issue of like safety there. So I didn't think like side cut really had anything to do with it. So I was pissed, and I obviously voiced my opinion, wrote some things and yada yada. But like once it was done, I was like, head, let's start making prototypes. This is a year before it came in. Like, let's start making prototypes now, and I can start iterating, because like we're gonna have to get creative on ideas to make these things ski in a way that we can like keep a modern technique on. And there's like, we're gonna have to start manipulating ways to do that.
Yeah. So what things can you then manipulate within what they've sort of said these are the rules to then make, what did you start doing to make it work?
I mean, first just like start iterations of like what the current ski was in within the confines. And then like the first big thing that like nobody else was doing at that time was we just basically made like, we took an idea out of like the powder skis and made a reverse camber
tip.
And like, I don't think anybody else, like head didn't actually make that in the factory. We would just like go and then bend it after it came out. And so that just like made the front of the ski like hook in.
Yep.
So that was like one piece. Within head we made like, so in reading the rules, like where they measure the side cut, we made like a fishtail ski. So like instead of being a 195, like if you were to truly do the side cut, instead of being a 195, it would have been like a 192. And then the side cut would kind of like come, the tail of the ski was really narrow.
Right.
And so where they measure would be narrower. And so the side, you'd manipulate the side cut.
Right.
And 2 weeks before it sold, and that was like my fastest ski, was that rule became illegal because they like saw that was like happening. And so then we had to go back to like the second best pair of skis at that point, which like obviously was like working well for me at that point. And then another piece is like we made the boots way softer also.
Really?
Because like you just knew you need to like hyperflex everything in order to like be able to pull the radius. And you need to like have the boot soft enough that you could like hold that position, like not have like the boot rebound you out of it.
Yeah.
So you could like hold that position longer to be able to like keep the turn shape going to actually pull the ski around.
Yeah. So the boot thing, like I've listened to some podcasts where Bodhi talks about boots, and he seems to be really into like, you know, like the direction it flexes and how that affects like the radius of the ski, or you flexing it affects how the ski turns. So did head give you the opportunity to, with the boot thing, did you have some influence over, I want the boot to kind of work this way? And if so, can you help me understand how that works? I think I sort of get it, but I'm trying to get my head around, like, so when your ankle flexes and it's on edge, like why would it be flexing one way and make it turn harder versus less?
I mean, so like my personal boot at that time, I mean, I like, so I guess to break it down, like in that sense, like, so if the boot like doesn't allow you to like flex to the inside, which would be like into the turn, or
yep,
like that would make it more aggressive going inside, but it would, like if it could still flex forward but push you out, that would give you like that support onto the inside, but also would let you flex forward, is like one way. I mean, for me, I like to be aligned like pretty straight.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't like my boots to like push me out one way when I started flexing.
Yeah.
I just kind of like liked my, like the way my natural anatomy would work, just like flexing straight forward. And that would like, you know, the boot, like if you like stand in a pair of boots, especially when it's warm in your like house, the boot smushes out on the sides.
Yeah.
And that's what like delivers the power to the ski. And so like how you manipulate that is important, but also like how that like rebound comes out is important too, because that gives you power out of the turn.
Yeah.
So like at that point, actually, it already had like a very peculiar boot set up with head. Like I had a lot of cuts, I had a lot of carbon in the back, I had all these things. That I had like made my like setup before this rule change really good.
Yep.
And I didn't want to mess with that too much because I liked how like the position it put me in, especially like, I mean, this is another like side tangent, course setting at the time was like really tight and turny. And so you needed something that turned a lot. Nowadays, like back then it was like 24 meters from turn GS turn to GS turn on average and like pretty turny. Nowadays it's like 28 meters in dead straight. So like the sport's changed a lot as far as like course setting in that like that time frame.
Yeah, okay.
But so like you needed something that would like crank a tight radius and like you could hold across the fall line as well.
Yeah.
And so like I just had a lot of like cuts in it, and like it wasn't just like down cuts, it was back cuts, and like so the whole like the top of the boot.
So
would,
you're
like,
saying
be...
actual like cuts? You took like a knife, so the
plastic. Yeah, we took like a Dremel and just like cut U cuts down, and then cut U cuts back. But
so
then like load the back
the
of it with carbon to like keep the structural integrity of the boot while allowing the boot to kind of like fold.
So move more like an ankle joint.
Yeah,
would
exactly.
move, but still be rigid all around. So
yeah.
laterally and back
yeah.
and stuff.
Like it was still support. A stiff. It was still a stiff plastic.
Yeah.
But it just had a lot of cuts, so that you could like, you could actually like start cocking your angle without actually like having the boot just like zip, or the ski and the boot just like zip in
yeah.
to the top of the turn. This is getting like very wonky, obviously, but like so, and like so like in those iterations, like throughout the winter before that actually came. The rules came about, I started figuring out a lot of these things. And also like another piece I'd figured out was that like in ski racing, like in GS course, they're like generally like a minute to a minute 20 long. But like at that point, it felt more like running, like at the bottom of the course, like my analogy for like what you feel like in the finish area would be like running a 400 with like a 50 pound backpack on. It's kind of like what, so you're like okay. winded, you're like, your legs are heavy and winded, but like after skiing on the 35 meter skis, it felt like somebody told you to do max squats as many times as possible. So you didn't feel winded.
Right.
But your legs were absolutely cooked. Like you had like just no more like muscle endurance or muscle strength left after like a fraction of the time, because you're like so much more like manual usage like, of turning. Yeah. Like
yeah.
using your full muscle strength, to, like muscle these things around. So like that gave me cues on like what I needed to like work on in the summertime.
Okay. So you got stronger. Endurance.
So, I mean, so it's like, if you're talking about like the physiology of like a ski racer, like if you're a cyclist, it's really simple. Like you do 90% A1 and you do a little bit of like threshold and you do a little bit of like super high intensity. And that's like your workout scheme. And like, cause you're trying to like build your efficiency. Ski racing, we don't like fit into one of those things. It's not like, it's not just strength. It's not just like endurance. It's not just anaerobic. It's like this weird smish-mash of all those things,
yeah.
Which I think makes it like complicated to like train for in a sense, but I also think it like also makes it so there's not like one simple solution for it. So like one of the things I would like do was like, I do these like muscle endurance workouts. Like you can actually look it up on YouTube because like NBC did film like one of those, and like it was basically I do like 10 squats at 315, I do 20 deadlifts at I think it was like 285, and then I would do a quad mill, which is like a rotating like platform, and one single leg for 45 seconds, other leg, like leg extensions heavy for 30 reps, ham curls for 30 reps, like do like a slack line, and then what was like the other thing I would do in there? Something else. And then in the end, we had this eccentric leg press machine. So like you'd lift up one side, the hydraulic would lift up the other side, and then the way down you lifted both. And I'd do that for as many reps as I could. And that cooked you. Like you were like breathing hard kind of, but like your legs were gassed. We would do like centimeter like leg girth measurements before and after.
Yeah.
And like I'd get 3 centimeters bigger. Like my
wow.
legs would just be like so fucking pumped with blood.
Yeah.
Like just like everything was like puffy. So like.
So strongest you've ever been.
Yeah. Really strong. But also like I could lift, you know, like near my max weight 5 minutes into a workout as the same as I could at the start of the workout.
Wow.
Which is like, if you talk to somebody who's like a trainer, there's not like, that doesn't necessarily like match with any like,
any
of the
normal
system, like
yeah.
system training, like yeah.
yeah.
So that was like a big part of my training there, and honestly, like those skis and the setup worked well for my skiing. Like my skiing was like a loopier, more like consistent pressure, completed turn versus like, a lot of people who are like, would kind of like skid 10% of the turn and like hit hard.
Yeah.
And like, I would like do like a whoa, whoa, like a swoopier turn. And those skis really punished you if you slid them. Like you wouldn't get any rebound of the ski.
And it almost got more dead.
Yeah, they're like, they didn't give you anything.
Yeah.
Unless you like fully arced them, they didn't give you anything. And so like every single turn, if you like, obviously in a World Cup, you can't arc every turn, but if you can just arc 10% more of those turns and swoopier and getting the rebound,
yeah,
made all the difference. So it matched my technique better too.
So yeah, you actually, so if I'm following along here, right, boots, getting the boots sort of right and yep, and allowing a bit more flex and not too like reboundy.
Yep.
Changing the skis, physical stuff, but your technique wasn't, you didn't really change that much. Is that
in a way, like I could just like amplify my strengths,
yes,
to it.
So that was your strength. Yeah. 'Cause we're talking with like Manny, he was saying that like he's an excellent glider.
Yeah.
Like in all the gliding sections, he was saying like he was always faster, not on the other bits. And so that was his strength. And he's saying, when you know as a racer your strengths, like you really have to exploit them hugely, yeah, and you don't try and take on other new things because that's a risk, because you almost don't know if you can pull that off in time, you know, if you're going to work on something new. So your technique was already like,
yeah,
you were partway there with it, so you didn't have to.
Yeah, I would mostly agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah, cool. Yeah. So do you, like now, free skiing, like do you play with your boots much to this day?
Not really now because like, I'm not trying to like race and I'm really lucky. Like my foot fits in a small boot without much work. I mean, I barely ever punched or ground or anything like that. So like I was lucky in that sense. And like now I have like for a normal person would be considered an extremely stiff boot. For me, it's considered extremely soft, and like yeah, that works well. And like the latest head boot that I helped them develop a handful of years ago, I think is like fun and awesome. I mean, I have it like I have a ton of lift now that I don't have to like be measured and things like that. But otherwise, like I don't do anything too crazy.
Yeah, I did work because you've got bare feet. I was looking at your feet because I'm the opposite. I've like quite a broad foot, really bony, and it's always been painful.
Yep.
yeah, and I've noticed a lot of people that kind of do well, they can just get in a ski boot, like a lot of the time, a plug boot 92, and just ski like for the whole day, and they're not in pain. So that was something that's probably like on your side from the beginning. Like you, yeah, looking at your feet, you haven't got like really a...
No, I don't have I don't really have any bone spurns, yeah.
No, so, no, yeah, like, not even on your heel or anything.
Yeah. No, so I get like the little like navicular thing on the top sometimes, but that was about it.
Yeah, okay, cool, yeah. Cool. Yeah, because I know I've heard in other interviews you've done, you liked tinkering. Are there any other things that you tinkered with that are not within the realms of, you know, cutting into the boot and adding carbon? Did you tinker with like binding lifts, binding placement?
Yeah, I mean, all those, every variable. I mean, like, one thing that, like, a lot of people would, like, make fun of me for was I did a lot of skiing with, like, one boot on each foot in training. And, like, that's funny. Like, I talked to, like, some of the athletes who, like, when they're testing, like, in the middle of the season, they, like, need to be everything, like, perfect. Like, each foot's each foot. And, like, I was like, you can go through twice as many setups if you just, like, zero in. Like, if you trust your feeling and you're like, okay, one... It doesn't work in slalom because slalom is like too tight. Like I can't have two different boots in slalom unless they're like almost identical and feel the difference. But in like GS and speed, like, oh, like you can really feel the difference from foot to foot. Mm-hmm. And so I did a lot of that. That was like kind of new, different, that like not very many people were willing to do. But like in the time it took me to go through 10, 20 setups, you know, somebody else is going through 5.
Mm-hmm.
So like in that sense, like I did go through like a lot of iterations and experimented. And then the same goes with like, I think like every person, like I think has a place where they mount the bindings on the ski and ramp angle that like kind of works for them, and it ends up working for them across the board. Like I found out, actually, I learned this like my first year on the ski team. Like it was cool. Like my coach at the time, Adam Chadbourne, that whole summer we didn't time against each other once, but we timed against ourselves. So like we wouldn't actually know if like he set up a slalom course, if it was 30 seconds long and I was a 30 seconds on the dot, I didn't know that Andrew Weibrecht was what his time, if he was a 31 or 29. I just knew that I was, this run was plus four tenths my first run or minus 3/10 my first run. And so yeah, he kept that secret from us all like summer long. So we only worked on our skiing versus ourselves. And then like, so within that, we tinkered a lot because you weren't under like the competitive constraints of like, oh, I got to beat Andrew today. Cause like, I want to like, you know, cause I'm competitive. Like that's just the nature of it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I need to like, I can go play with all these things. And so like that year I figured out, like, I always like my skis mounted, you know, 2 centimeters behind the recommended. And I always like kind of like my toe between, kind of dependent on the skis or what was happening, 2 to 4 millimeters down on the toe.
And that was, you mean like,
yeah, toe low.
Toe low, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so that kind of like spread itself out throughout. I think on the 35 meter skis, I went even actually because.
Your standard.
Yeah, I had on the bindings, just the same height on the toe as the heel.
Oh, that, right.
Because when you go up at the toe, it makes the front of the ski hook up more.
Yeah.
And I needed the ski to hook up more. So I was building it up to be more aggressive because it could be.
Mm-hmm.
But same like principle, I was still like way behind. Like me versus Alexi Pintero is like, I was 2 centimeters to 3 centimeters behind him all the time.
Yeah. Wow. Like, that's so, quite a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like even like my free skis now, I'm like, am I always mounting like 2 or 3 centimeters behind recommended. Yeah. And that's like, just cause I think I use my center mass and like I go dump everything way forward through a part of the turn where if like the ski's mounted normally, it just like feels like it's like,
it just comes back to you. Yeah. You can't open the turn up enough. Yeah. Okay. Hey, like switching gears a bit, you've got a little boy.
Yeah.
Jax. You ski a lot with him?
Yeah. Jax and I ski quite a bit. He's 5. He actually broke his leg when I was skiing with him last year. So he didn't like, he missed like 6 weeks in the middle of the season and started skiing actually again last spring. But yeah, skiing is fun with him. I mean, he goes to ski school at Deer Valley as well, which is a lot more fun having them teach him. And then I go out and like reap the benefits of it.
Yeah.
Cause he's then like psyched to like show off to me like what he's learned or like these little zones he goes with them. Because he's not that keen on like me being the leader in that sense. So that's fun. And then I have 2-year-old twin boys as well, which, one of them is like into playing past the baby on skis. The other one doesn't want the skis clicked onto his feet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And would you say there's anything like, cause I got my boy, he's into skiing and, I was really afraid that he would not like skiing and I've tried to not push him and just bring him along. But if he doesn't want to go skiing, we don't go skiing. Is there anything you've learned that you would say pass on to like to other, you know, keen skiers that have kids, like words of wisdom? Has there been points where you've pushed it and you're like, regret it?
Ski school is a beautiful thing. Yeah, having other two people teach your kids is often, you end up reaping the benefits. I mean, maybe that's like, I am stubborn and my son is stubborn and that's maybe like, he has that piece of him, a piece of me in him. So, that's like my recommendation, but
yeah,
I mean, like, at that age, like snacks and hot chocolate and
and
bribing to stay out is always a worthwhile thing, keeping them warm and all those things. So they're, you know, they don't get too pissed, you know, inevitably there's going to be like kid breakdowns on the mountain, but
yeah, absolutely. And are you, cause you've joined, the Carve team, the digital ski coach. And so now you're kind of in this role of influencing people's skiing,
yeah,
right? So through this app, and you have this new mode where you can, it's like you've sort of developed a bit of a progression or suggested things to do. What have you learned from, like, now, like, it's not really about racing, it's just general skiing. Yeah, can you talk to that at all? Like, was it, are you kind of like, oh, it's harder to teach people than I thought, or yeah.
I mean, I'd say, like, I was, even as, like, a racer, I was generally, like, very open about, like, sharing my, like, so-called secrets. Like, I don't know, if you look at some other racers out there, I don't know, Mikhail or Marcel or whatever, like, they don't want anybody videoing them or watching them or telling anybody anything. And, like, I was like, if I figured it out at this point, then, like, if you're copying me, then I have 3 steps ahead of you. So I might as well just, like, blurt it out there. And, like,
yep.
So I guess, like, I'd always, like, kind of shared what I learned. Like, I did that, like, New York Times thing and, like, also, like, post a lot of my video and, like, thoughts on that over the years. And I would coach every summer at Mount Hood, too. I had a camp there. So, like, I was kind of, like, in it in that sense. And then also, like, I'm a technique nerd, I guess. And so, like, I've thought about these things a lot over the years, and skiing and ski racing is very technical. I think, like, when I first started working with CARB, is like, okay, like, take all these things I've known and learned and try to work on in my skiing, and then, like, adapt it to what we can measure within the unit, which actually, like, I was shocked by, like, was more than I would have guessed.
Yeah.
And also, like, I've always believed, like, that, like, skiing starts from, like, the ground up. Like, people, like, get really hung up on, like, what people are doing at the upper body. And I'm like, no, like, everybody's, like, always would see me and just, like, swinging my arms. Like, that's a timing thing. And it's, like, maybe a way to, like, manipulate a little bit more speed out of the turn. But it's not, like, that's not a technique thing. Like, everything else was, like, happening, like, waist down or, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, nipples down, basically. So I guess I was always in tune with that. And, like, the CARB unit, like, lends itself really well to, like, measure those things. And, you know, like, a challenge for me always was, like, trying to, like, keep my shins parallel, because I did have, like, a tendency, especially, like, in slalom, to, like, be over my outside ski, but then my inside ski would, like, be way out in front and not, like, not tipped over enough, like, the edge similarity side of things. So, like, have something that I worked on that is, like, the most easily measured by this was
this unit, yeah,
was by the CARB, was really, like, validating, and it could do it, like, simply and accurately. So yeah, when I first, like, started talking with those guys, I was, like, very skeptical. Like, I've seen a lot of these, like, ski gimmicks come and go over the years and been approached and talked to by a lot of them, and most of them are BS, or pretty much every single one I'd see to that point was BS. And so when I gave it a try, I was actually, like, pleasantly surprised that, like, actually this thing is measuring things in my skiing that are real, and, like, yeah, picking out things that, like,
you think are important.
That I think are important, but also, yeah, like, things I know in my own skiing that, like, my coach would know who's been with me forever, but I, like, could see, like, in a particular day or a turn, but, like, the average person will never notice.
Yeah.
The average even coach would never notice in my skiing.
Yeah.
Where this could, like, pick it out, which I thought was pretty unique.
Yeah, yeah. I had a similar experience when I first tried it. I went down, and then I was looking at the stuff, and it's like, your 4.5 balance is really not very good. You're really back. I was like, no, I'm not. Like, or I didn't feel it. Anyway, so I was talking with a friend, and he's like, you should try a gas pedal. Like, perhaps something's going on there. And anyway, so I put some business cards under the toes and did it, and did another run. And as you just mentioned before, like, with your binding, with the longer skis, tip hooked up, and I could feel my forefoot for the first time probably ever, like, or more than, yeah, before. And so it just helped me to figure out, like, for my anatomy, I needed a flatter sort of boot board. So it was just, without that, I don't know how long it would have gone before not ever really feeling the front of the ski.
Yep.
Have controlled it. So it's, yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. So how did the CARB camp go? That was just on recently?
Yeah, I just did a camp with Deer Valley, and we used the CARB as kind of to augment and use it as a tool. And also, like, because I have the program within CARB, like, it's kind of like a way to, within the camp, we, like, worked on, like, the same things that we work on within, like, the actual app in my, like, TED mode or Trinity,
yeah,
Olympian, whatever,
mode, yeah,
whatever you want to call it. So, like, it was cool to be able to like use what we like can learn about somebody skiing within Carve and coach them like on the hill personally, but also like it gives them like a path to like keep getting better, because like 3-day camp, like there's only so much you can really do. Like you can change somebody's skiing and give them a lot of ideas. But this, like they can then go measure the ideas, and then with like, cause I have a program in there, like they can also kind of follow the same kind of criteria.
Yeah.
So that was fun. Like everybody's really psyched on it. And I think, you know, like a lot of people like skiing did actually make a big jump.
Yeah. Cool.
So it was fun in that regard. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. And like totally different topic, but when did you start your goggle and protection company? Was that while you were still?
Yeah.
So, and was that your idea or did someone approach you? Like, how did that all start?
My first year on the ski team, I was at a fist race in Italy, and this guy in the race had these like carbon fiber shin guards, that looked really cool. And at the time, like all the shin guards were just, you know, like cheap plastic looking things. And a team man and I just like, hey, like, where'd you get those things? What are those? He's like, oh, I made them in my garage. And he was like an engineer working for a carbon fiber company and just made these like cool shin guards in his garage. And we're like, hey, can you make us some? He's like, yeah. And so that's how I originally met Carlo, who's my partner in Shred. And so he started like prototyping protective gear, like carbon fiber shin guards and then like carbon fiber arm guards, which they're like the first actual arm guards like worn outside of the suit. And so we just kind of developed this like friendship there. And then after the 2006 Olympics, I didn't want to be caught dead skiing with a UVEX, a Brico, a Carrera, or any of that stuff outside of a race course. Like, and that was like really the only options. But also like if I raced with a Smith or an Oakley, it just wasn't going to work because like the frames weren't big enough to be able to like have a big enough field of view to see in gates, which honestly for like the normal consumer, whether it's like somebody gonna sideswipe you or skiing trees or whatever, like the product just didn't like wasn't good. So I was like, there needs to be, I need something that I think is cool, but also like I need something that helps me in my own racing. And because I was like a tinker and I loved like the product side of things, that was like the initial idea for Shred, and Shred was like a nickname a coach of mine gave me when I was like 10 years old, Ted Shred.
Yeah.
And so Carlo was actually out in Park City staying at my house on a mountain bike ride, and I was telling him about this. He's like, actually, I know where a goggle manufacturer is. Let's go see if like they can make something for us or what they have and what we can do. And then 6 months later, we started it and started getting pumping product out. And
what year was that?
Now it was like late fall or late November 2006, and then early in 2007 when we first started selling them.
Okay.
And so yeah, we've come a long ways. I mean, nowadays like he ended up going to like MIT for business school, and so we work with MIT Sports Lab for a lot of like our projects, like our lens technology, and like so for being like one of the only, or probably like the only innovative like independent company out there, like having, you know, patents and technologies that like not even the biggest companies out there have or can perform is pretty cool to be like on that cutting edge. And I mean, we always like think of it like, okay, like I want to solve a problem that like I had or like better my performance. Like, I don't know, like example would be like flat light. Like in racing, like you're skiing in flat light and then the sun pokes out, that's like 2 seconds. So if you can like create a lens that is a little bit better in flat light, instantly, like you can shave a half a second off your time. So that's like a big thing we worked out. Like now we've worked with MIT for a few years and creating like our latest lenses that like
can you kind of speak into maybe simple language how that's like what things factor into that?
It's lens tint and like polarized filters. So like what they do.
Can you make it better than the human eye?
Yes.
You can help the human eye see.
Yeah, because you can add, so like there's always like, so we have like a polarizing filter. So like there's always, but if you do full polarize, you don't catch all like the glare. So you need some glare off the snow because snow is reflective.
Yeah.
Even when it's like full white out. you need to like filter out a little bit of that, because then they actually see, you can like pick up a little bit of the shadows and definition, and then the right tint can actually like bring out some of that, that contrast as well. And the way we do that is like in a light room where we like have snow simulated and simulate flat light.
Yeah.
And then we do like human and AI testing, and then we map it out. And then that way we can like do hundreds of iterations really, really fast.
Yeah. Wow.
And yeah, that's how we like came out with our latest contrast boosting lens 2.0. That's like wild. So to give you an example on that, like athletes don't generally like switching equipment up, especially like something like goggles in the middle of the season. And we launched that right before the Olympics, and 90% of the Olympics was full sun, so it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
And the guys used it. But then on the GS, men's GS day, it was nasty, like snowed a ton. And one of our athletes, Mathieu Favre, he was, you know, getting 5th to 20th every race. And like, it was nasty out, and he got 3rd. And he used that lens when normally he was not like somebody who would have just switched up on a race day.
Yeah.
And he did, and had his best race of the year. And a couple of our athletes in that race also like had the best days of their year.
Yeah, wow.
And not to like credit that all, sure, but like that, yeah, definitely like I think had, you know, a slight play in that.
Yeah. The small percentages, yeah, all add up.
So
right?
Yeah, that's like, we always like try to like not think about like the marketing gimmick, but like actually like what's going to help the best person in the world. But my wife like is not going to go skiing when it's flat light. She is in the lodge.
Yeah.
She's not keen to go out there. And so if that keeps her out in the slopes, then it's a win and it helps anybody. So
can yeah. she rip a turn?
She's a good skier. She grew up like playing soccer and then skied for fun here and there. And then she was a snowboarder when I first met her, and now she's a skier again. So I don't coach her. I don't think she'd appreciate that, but she can ski anywhere, and she skis fast. She skis faster than I'm really comfortable with, I guess, a lot of the time.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. And she gets out like a few times a week, and
yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, it's hard not to when you live in Park City.
I know, yeah. And this season's been awesome,
it's been
too.
Unreal.
Yeah. So is your season now, what does it sort of look like? Do you get to still spend a lot of time at home, and or are you off around different places a lot?
I mean versus when I was racing, I'm home a ton more, obviously. And this year, yeah, around quite a bit. I mean, I still like have to travel a little bit here and there for either business shred or like some various like stuff with sponsors or whatnot. So still some travel, but not anything too crazy. Like it's generally like 5-day trips versus before is weeks and months trips.
yeah cool, yeah. Hey, so I've got like maybe one two more questions, but I've asked a lot of people like racers what their favorite drills were, like effective drills, like, and probably thinking like more back when you were developing, like as a junior, like Schlope was like one ski, and I don't know if you know Jimmy Krupka.
Yeah, he
was like, yeah, one ski for sure, and like that up and over drill, and so is there? Do you have some like one or two drills you thought really were influential in helping you like really get like foundational technique, not like what you know arcing the turn, but just like good solid ski technique? Yeah.
So I actually have like really strong opinions on drills. Like,
yeah,
I find it really annoying when people are doing drills and they're not on an arc. So like for me, I hated drills going up. And if it wasn't a drill that wasn't arcing, I thought it was pointless. Cause like if you're doing a drill, you need to see what it actually influences in the arc. And so like I see on the World Cup, like all these guys have these little drill rituals and they're just like sliding these turns and doing these weird arm movements. It's like, you don't even know how that's influencing your ski. Like do it on an arc and then you know how it's influencing the ski. So that's like one piece on drills. So a drill I do love is like one ski skiing. Like I do love that.
Trying to
especially
arc.
On like a flatter terrain. And
yeah.
Not only for just like the ability to like have the balance and like switch the edge, but also it just like helps you get the feeling of like locking your hip in, and also like strengthens like glute med and glute and all those areas that like, so I think that's like a great fitness drill, but also like a drill in general. Another one I like is like javelin turns, also like on kind of flat where you can arc. So that also does the same thing, like feels like you lock your hip in.
Yeah, that like that what you say there, that lock the hip in thing, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
And would you probably say that the people that came on your camp, like you would have really loved to just been able to have like an injection needle that just gave them that feeling, because a lot of them don't. Like, it's like,
I mean, it's just like staying strong over your outside foot in like a manner that like you're stable in, you know, like a lot of people will like try to push the outside ski out to like get around, or doing all these motions. It's just like, it's really just like resisting the force and like doing, you know, one ski or javelins. Like,
why do you think the javelin, why do you reckon the javelin? Cause you know, so if people don't,
cause I like how like it like, bringing the tip over actually like brings you, like it twists your hips just enough that you're actually like loaded even better over the outside ski.
So it kind of teaches the part where you've got to like have this little rotation.
Yeah, just like a slight like, yeah, counterbalance of it. Like,
yeah,
like
not force. Much, right? But just, yeah. And so you get that feeling from that, from that drill. But yeah, I'd like your...
And then like on flats, like, railroad tracks, like just trying to keep like the shins perfectly parallel, and whether you like reach down and you're like inside hand, your inside knee, trying to push your hand, your knee against the hand is a good one. But yeah, like overall, like, I mean, there's some other more drills that I like, but generally like I'm not a big drill fan.
Yeah. So yeah, like you said, when you're in the sort of development stages, you would get annoyed, like, oh god, the coaches
like wedge turns, like why am I doing wedge turns right now, like
this... why do you want me to slide a turn,
I'm trying to learn how to arc here, not, and I wanted to feel like what manipulating my body feels like on an arc, not just like smashing through the boot on a slid ski.
It was funny, like, because Manny, after he broke his leg, we were talking, he went and did, after, it's like, what am I going to do? And he did his levels in Canada, in ski instructing. And like, he found it really difficult. I mean, you know, relatively speaking, he was like the first time I slid a turn in like 10 years.
Yeah.
And like, he's being made to do all that. So yeah, but I get your point about like, if what you're trying to do is really be fast on an arc, like do everything that makes just that. So
yeah.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. Well, thanks for your time, Ted.
Yeah,
really appreciate your insights and sharing your knowledge with us. Yeah.
Thank you.
No problem.
Awesome.
Sweet. That's it.
Cool.
Thank you.
Easy.